This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Over the last 2 weeks, both Republicans and Democrats have hosted their national conventions, officially selecting their nominees for November's presidential race. In the coming months, Wisconsinites can expect both national and state candidates campaigning to gain the upper hand, with openings in the U.S. Senate, Congress, and the Wisconsin legislature. Joining us today to talk about the fall election season, our 3rd Congressional District Republican Chair and Delegate to the Republican National Convention, Brian Westrate from Eau Claire. Chair of the La Crosse County Democratic Party and Delegate to the Democratic National Convention, Vicki Burke of Onalaska, Tim Dale, a political scientist from University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, and Keith Knutson, a history professor from Viterbo University. And first, you know, I just want to talk a little bit about Brian and Vicki's role as a delegate to the convention. So, you know, Vicki, do you kind of want to explain, you know, what the role of a delegate is?
At the 3rd Congressional District Caucus, I was elected as a Clinton delegate. The Congressional District delegates, there were 7 from the 3rd Congressional District, 4 Sanders delegates, and 3 Clinton delegates. And so we are pledged to support that candidate on the first ballot. And there are different types of delegates. We had 97 in the total a delegation. And so my role was to go there, and certainly in the roll call of the vote, we cast our votes for the candidate on that first ballot. And the other night, the first day, we do vote on the platform and the rules that have been brought forward by the Platform and the Rules Committee. And then we also listen to the speakers that are supporting democratic principles and are supporters of our presidential candidate and vice president.
And Brian, do you have other thoughts on, you know, kind of the role of a delegate?
On the Republican side, it's very similar to what was just described. And, you know, it's interesting that I think the delegates in the modern age, conventions have largely become 4-day commercials for the party, the ideology, and ultimately the candidate. And that's just, I think, a necessary function, again, of living in the information age where information is instantly transmitted, where media is constant. And so as a delegate to a convention where the candidate has received, at least on the Republican side, and obviously on the Democrat side as well this time, has received the necessary votes, the necessary pledged delegates via the primary election process, you know, your role is really somewhat of a formality. But it's necessary that we continue to have them because of that time, and it looked like it might have been this year for both on the Republican side and the Democrat side, but for that time where there isn't a candidate who has the necessary 50% plus one pledged delegates going into a national convention. And so, I mean, as a delegate, in the end, your actual vote is somewhat of a formality because of the nature of the rules that we all agree to. But it is important, I think, ongoing that the parties continue to have these conventions and that they continue to have grassroots delegates there to represent the people of their community should there be a time where a candidate has not received the necessary pledged votes going in.
And so the Republican National Convention was 2 weeks ago in Cleveland. Brian, what are your thoughts on how the convention went?
You know, I think it went well. It was certainly somewhat different from the Democrats' convention in that we didn't have quite the same luminaries, I suppose, as a president and a sitting president and a sitting first lady, you know, an immediate past president and Mr. Clinton having been there. But I think that I saw a stark difference in that I felt like the Republican National Convention showed a fair amount of light, shined a fair amount of light on problems our nation is facing. And as I watched the Democrat National Convention, it seemed like it was really all about trying to define Hillary Clinton. And basically, because you are coming out of 8 years of a sitting Democratic president, I think, you know, the convention had to be about, hey, you know, we're doing great. Our president has done great, and our candidate will continue doing what the current president has done. And you're almost locked into doing that, I think, as the party of the sitting president, because the alternative would be to say, well, we haven't been doing great for the last 8 years, so now we need a change. And I think that that's what I saw.
we'll take a moment to talk about the DNC later in the program. But, you know, really looking at, you know, some of the content and the speakers at, you know, the RNC, you know, how do you think Republicans in Wisconsin, Brian, you know, feel about Donald Trump as their nominee?
Well, I mean, I think that people, I think a lot of people went into the convention cautiously optimistic about Donald Trump or agnostic about Donald Trump, and but very much committed against the idea of a president Hillary Clinton. I think that they came out after 4 days of the convention more optimistic about Mr. Trump and still very much against the idea of a president, another President Clinton. That was my general sense. That's certainly how I went into it. I mean, I was a Scott Walker supporter, then I was a Marco Rubio supporter, then I was a Cruz supporter, and it was on Wednesday following the Indiana primary that I became a Donald Trump supporter for the first time. And so that's how I went into that convention. And I came out much more confident in Mr. Trump's ability to be president. And I think that that's kind of what I saw from a fair amount of the 42 delegates and 42 alternates we had from Wisconsin there with us in Cleveland.
And Tim, you know, going to you as a political scientist, you know, what were your thoughts on how the Republican National Convention went?
Well, as we've been hearing, one of the really key features of a convention is to move the party and the candidates from the primary election and really signaling both symbolically and in reality the beginning of the general election. And I think this year, really more than we've seen in history on both sides, you had a party that was divided. And a real debate that happened during the primary elections. And so we saw dissent at both conventions. In the case of the Republicans, Ted Cruz stands up and does not endorse Trump. I'm not sure it was the wisest thing to have people booing him. They could have just pretended that Cruz endorsed Trump, and it would have been probably better for everyone, maybe except for Cruz. But I think that that happening at the Republican convention and the Sanders supporters vocally booing from the floor, you had booing going on at both conventions. I think that shows that it wasn't just a party. It wasn't just a big celebration. It really was a time for the parties to bring their supporters together. And so the coalition you need to win a general election is different than the coalition you need to win in a primary. And so both Trump and Clinton needed to put together about 50% of their people to win their own primary election, and in each case they did, but you need far more than that to win a general election. And so then the move from the primary to the general election at the convention is also, who are you going to start to speak to build that support, to get to the 50 plus 1% of Americans? And so I think moving that message outward is what we saw at both conventions. Whether they're successful or not is really going to be what we're going to be watching from this point forward.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about the November elections, what voters can expect in both state and federal races in the Cooley region. We're here with 3rd Congressional District Republican Chair Brian Westrate of Eau Claire, Chair of the La Crosse County Democratic Party Vicki Burke of Onalaska, Tim Dale, a political scientist from University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, and Keith Knudsen, a history professor from Viterbo University. And Keith, you know, what are your thoughts on the Republican National Convention? You know, we've been kind of talking about what took place there and how, you know, Wisconsin Republicans, you know, feel about Trump.
As Tim noted, as these conventions portray themselves to a larger audience than would have been following the primary process leading up to the convention, the general interpretation of the Republican convention was that it was rather dark. And I would point to three, let's say, moments. One of them, the last one, is throughout the convention. First, Donald Trump's acceptance speech. If the country believes that one person alone has answers to our social, political, economic problems, then that might be the direction that voters would take. That was Donald Trump's proclamation. He is the only person to be in a position to lead and solve our political issues, I'm going to call it now. Tim's already alluded to the night before that, on the third night of the convention, Ted Cruz stood up and said, vote your conscience. Presumably a good conscience. A good conscience for Ted Cruz would not vote for Donald Trump I found that to be a very problematic moment for the Republican Party in the National Convention. The third point I'd make is that throughout the convention, the largest cries from the floor were "lock her up" in reference to Hillary Clinton. So I think the country might be left asking why were these Republican delegates in Cleveland shouting "lock her up," supporting a single person who has answers to our problems, and they want to lock up one particular individual. It was a dark affair, and I would suggest that it holds certain threatening intonations to our society as a whole.
Brian, what are your thoughts on the idea that, you know, the Republican National Convention this year was maybe a little bleak?
Well, I mean, first of all, let me just respond that Donald Trump, the gentleman who just spoke, strikes me as somebody who actually, like, read news stories about what Donald said but didn't actually listen to the full 75-minute speech. The only time he really said, I'm the person that knows the system, he was talking about the system and how corrupt it is, because for years he has been donating into the political class, and he knows how corrupt Washington, D.C. is. You know, as far as vote your conscience, I mean, the idea is, you know, Ted Cruz said what he said. He's Ted Cruz. And the booing was not orchestrated. I mean, he made it sound like it just happened from the floor. There was no control of the 2,500 grassroots delegates who were there. As far as it being, you know, dark, I mean, the lock her up was by no means the loudest cheer. I was on the floor of the convention, and we had constant cheering. And USA, USA, USA was the loudest chant you would have heard that weekend. But lock her up was because of the FBI Director Comey's recent comment that she was extremely careless with top secret information. And extremely careless is a term you use instead of grossly negligent, because grossly negligent is a legal term that actually carries with it locking someone up. You know, as far as it being dark, well, look, the fact of the matter is the nation following 8 years of Barack Obama is going to be $20 trillion in debt. To give you some perspective, our gross domestic product is about $17 trillion. So the federal government now owes $3 trillion more than every drop of labor that this country, that the 320 million Americans that make up the United States, produce on a yearly basis. Put into another perspective, that's $212,000 per federal taxpaying unit that Americans owe. $212,000 is 3.9 years of the average American's total compensation. And so, yeah, it is dire. We Republicans do absolutely feel that the economy, that the financial situation is dire. And I didn't, you know, I'm sorry if that seems dire to people, but at what point is America going to need to wake up to the looming debt crisis that we have moving forward, and that we have Muslim terrorists driving cube vans and killing nearly 90 people in France as they're reveling in one of their nation's holidays, or nearly 40 people at a nightclub in Miami, officers being shot across the country. So it's not that America is not the greatest nation on the God's green earth. It absolutely is. But to ignore the problems facing us following 8 years of the Obama administration would be negligent. I'm 38 years old, and the highest level of racial tension I've ever lived under is now at the end of our first African-American president's reign. And it just, you know, so sounding some alarm bells about alarming things is sometimes necessary.
The Democratic National Convention was last week in Philadelphia. Vicki, what are your thoughts on how the DNC went?
Well, I thought it was really an uplifting and just an energizing time in Philadelphia. I hadn't visited there before, certainly the cradle of democracy for our nation. It was really a pleasure and an honor to be there representing people in the 3rd Congressional District. I thought really the four nights went very well. I mean, when you open the first night with Michelle Obama, I thought most people were just really overjoyed and really thought her speech was just one of the best speeches during the 4 days of the convention. As she talked about, you know, from a personal standpoint, she has been there close to the presidency and understands what has gone on. And that particular night, Bernie Sanders as well, spoke, and you know, united together was the theme. Elizabeth Warren, others who really recognized the necessity of uniting in order to solve the problems that we have. And also on that night, the dreamer Astrid Silva spoke, a recognition of the immigration problems. You know, I think we did recognize that there are problems that need to be solved, but they need to be solved with people working together. And on Tuesday night, certainly when you have a lineup like Vice President Joe Biden, who is much loved by Americans, Bill Clinton, and then Vice President nominee Tim Kaine, that was a very strong lineup as well. And the president talked about who better than Joe Biden and Barack Obama to know what it takes to be president of the United States. And both of them, you know, gave great support to Hillary Clinton, as well as acknowledging the areas at which she will have expertise and be able to help solve those serious problems that we have. And I'm sorry, Tuesday night was Bill Clinton. They were the vice president and president were Wednesday night. But Bill Clinton on Tuesday night, too, certainly gave an excellent description of his wife and the relationship that they have. And also the mothers that were there who had lost sons and daughters recognized the violence problem that we have within the United States, and also that the importance of fighting for families and children. And the stress was on Hillary Clinton's role and what she had done all her life working for families and children. And then, as I said, President Obama and Vice President Joe Biden on Wednesday night. Senate and Secretary Clinton, I think, in her speech, really introduced by her daughter, and also she touched on the many problems that we do have, the economy, you know, the minimum wage, immigration. I think the one thing I notice about the Democratic convention compared to the Republican convention was the diversity. And you saw that in the speakers that came to the stage and spoke to the delegates that were there and to the nation as well. That it is a diverse nation, and that was reflected. I thought one of the most moving was when the Khan parents talked about the death of their son. And I think that the whole audience was silent. There were 22,000 people there, and you couldn't hear. You know, usually during a convention, there's a lot of talking on the floor while speakers are speaking at the podium. There was nothing. Everyone listened to them very respectfully.
And so, you know, in light of the speakers that you mentioned, you know, how do you think Wisconsin Democrats feel about Hillary Clinton as their nominee?
You know, certainly there were Sanders supporters and there were Clinton supporters, but I think that all of those people support certain principles that are important to them. And I do believe that Hillary Clinton's been the subject of a lot of really bad publicity and negative comments. But when people get to honestly know her, first of all, they will see her concern about individuals, families, and children, something that always has been part of her life. This isn't just a new endeavor for her. And she has that experience as Secretary of State and as First Lady, and in her experience as in the state of, you know, of Arkansas, all of those things give her insight into what's happening and the ability to, I think, walk in the shoes of other people, which may not be as true of the other candidate. You know, that you have to have that empathy for people, the ability to see their problems and understand their problems.
That's Vicki Burke, a Clinton delegate from Onalaska, here with us today to talk about what area voters can expect during the fall election season. Also joining our conversation is Brian Westreet, a Trump delegate from Eau Claire, Tim Dale, a political scientist from University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, and Keith Knutson, a history professor from Viterbo University. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. And Keith, you know, as an outsider looking in, you know, what were your thoughts on how the DNC went this year?
To prepare for this, I was just reading an article about a year-long negotiation between the campaign managers of Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. And so for an entire year, the leaders of both campaigns have been meeting somewhat regularly in preparation for their convention moment. It didn't apparently all go as planned because the first day of the convention was quite disrupted with the Bernie Sanders supporters. But it would seem to me that that meeting preparation paid dividends as the four-day convention moved forward, so that the unrest on the part of the Sanders supporters, of course, coming just after the leaked Democratic National Committee emails that caused the resignation of Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Everything's not rosy for the Democrats, but I think that the effort at preparing for the convention, in my estimation, proved to produce some positive dividends for them.
And Tim, you know, how is the DNC maybe different this year than it has been in previous years?
Well, the convention is interesting because of how divided it was going into the convention. And as we have just been talking about, the division was clear on the floor. I think one of the challenges for Hillary Clinton, and we've already mentioned this as well, is that she's coming on the heels of two terms of a Democratic president, and 70% of people in the country are saying that we're on the wrong track. Now, in contrast to that, you have 53% saying they approve of the job that Barack Obama has done. Now, that may seem like a curious statistic. 53% say we like Obama, 70-plus percent say the country's on the wrong track. This is where Clinton has to navigate the space between we're on the wrong track and we also like Barack Obama as a country. And so I think that we're seeing kind of the evidence of how difficult that is to navigate. There are people and a lot of Democrats who are unsatisfied with their life, with the direction of the country, but they don't necessarily blame Barack Obama for that. And so Clinton's candidacy has to walk a fine line between I am the change that you want and also I'm going to be everything you like about Barack Obama. And so that's a difficult argument to make. And so I think what we saw at the DNC is an attempt to navigate that. Clinton needs the support of Bernie Sanders voters, but Clinton also needs the support of disaffected conservatives. And so one of the things I thought was remarkable about the DNC this year, and Republican commentators have said this, is that listening to Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton's speech, they've been compared to Ronald Reagan's convention speeches more than they've been compared to former convention speeches of Democrats. And so we went from the first part of the convention appealing to left-wing Democrats, moving into chants of USA and more patriotism and stronger on national defense, which is where Clinton believes she can pick up moderate voters. And so again, this complicated work of trying to put together the winning coalition, I think on the Democratic side, you saw a convention that reflected how the strategy is coming together for the Democrats.
And so, you know, looking ahead, Brian, what do you think we can expect in the next few months from Republicans as we prepare for the November election?
Well, I mean, I think certainly at the state level, you'll see a lot of focus on Senator Johnson on the U.S. Senate race. I think that you'll see a lot of focus on the Assembly, the state Senate, you know, to a certain extent, and I'm guessing the other three guests would also kind of confirm this. Presidential campaigns tell you what they want from you, and you can either give it to them or not, if you're able to or want to. But from a grassroots political leadership standpoint, you control the controllables. And for the most part, at least on the Republican side, that's statewide at a maximum races. You know, clearly, I think the Republican Party of Wisconsin and the grassroots all the way down are, you know, 100% on board with Donald Trump as our nominee and on defeating Hillary Clinton on November 8th. So between now and then, we're going to continue using the machine that we built during the 2010 election cycle and then the subsequent recall election and 2014 election to ideally defend Senator Johnson and hold on to our significant majority in the state assembly and what is a minor majority in the state Senate, and hopefully pick up some assembly and Senate seats moving forward. I don't think any of the five out of the eight congressional offices or House seats that we have are particularly in jeopardy, which isn't to say that we take any of them for granted. But, you know, I think that from a state level, the U.S. Senate race is our top priority that we can actually, you know, kind of have some significant control over how we pursue victory there. So I think that's what the next couple of months are going to be.
Keith, do you have some thoughts on this?
Senator Johnson did go to Cleveland and spoke. He had proclaimed his support for Donald Trump, but would not endorse him. Upon going to the convention, coming home, he discovered that the news reports are that $2 million of advertising money has been withdrawn. I read that $1 million of that was picked up by, I think, the League of Conservation Voters supporting Senator Johnson's opponent, Russ Feingold, a rematch of their Johnson's victory over Feingold 6 years ago. So I think that within the state, the impression I have is that Donald Trump has roiled Republicans within the state. That is, will they be able to unify in support behind him? And how will that and will it affect down-ballot voting? I think the Republican establishment across the country is fearful of the Trump effect down-ballot. Republicans have had great success in the off-year elections, 2010, 2014. But in the presidential election years, when Democrats are able to get the base of their voting bloc to the voting booth, Democrats have then been successful at the presidential level and I think more successful down ballot. So I think this election cycle, in my estimation, is focusing on the personality of Donald Trump, and will the general disruption that seems to follow him and in my estimation, proved to be quite successful within the Republican primary process, as Tim has alluded to. How will that play out in a general election? And the public opinion polls are now coming out after the Democratic National Convention. Mr. Trump apparently got something of a bump out of the Republicans' convention. The polls seem to be indicating that that bump is being wiped out and that Hillary Clinton's previous lead, somewhat narrow, has been restored, and so perhaps a greater bump for her, and therefore, I would say, for the Democrats out of their convention.
And Vicky, you know, what do you think we can expect from the Democratic Party in the next coming months as we kind of, you know, begin the general election?
Our candidates look forward to working with the presidential candidate. No, they are all supportive of Hillary Clinton and of the of Tim Kaine for vice president, and I think that Senator Feingold will help Hillary Clinton, and she will help Senator Feingold. I think that that's a good match, and that they will help each other because they realize that she realizes that when she becomes president, she will need to work with the Senate, and Senator Feingold is in a strong position to gain that Senate seat for the Democrats. I also think that there's a primary with the Congressman Kind Buchholz race, but we do know that after the primary, that seat will be held by a Democrat. And certainly we have strong candidates for State Senator Jennifer Schilling. She is very well-liked by people within Wisconsin, and she certainly will be an assist to the presidential and vice presidential candidates, and Representative Doyle in the 94th Assembly District, and then Jill Billings, who doesn't have any competition in the 95th, and then we have three county races that do not have competition. So we really have a strong number of candidates that are going to be working together. We have a good campaign office here in La Crosse County. La Crosse County has been solidly Democrat in the last elections. You know, the key is to organize, 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 and Secretary Clinton and Tim Kaine will have the benefit of the Obama organization to help them in their pursuit of the White House. And also, I think in the last couple of days, some rulings by court judges relating to the voting is going to make it easier for people to get to vote, expanding perhaps the days on which people will be able to vote, that weekend voting, and the number of days for residency. Some things that I think will help because that the judge indicated that these were rules made simply by the Republicans to keep people from voting.
Definitely want to talk about some of the local races that you mentioned, Vicky. But, you know, Tim, do you have any thoughts on kind of how the Democratic strategy will kind of play out here in Wisconsin in the coming months?
Yeah, well, I think Wisconsin's a really interesting case. It's not just Trump that has an uphill climb in Wisconsin. It's also Clinton. And we might remember that both Clinton and Trump lost Wisconsin by 13 points each. So the deficit that each one has to make up, even among their own party supporters, is about the same. And so we see in Wisconsin really a representative picture of what has to happen across the country, which is two candidates that are historically unpopular with the electorate have to convince people to vote for them. In fact, we see local candidates maybe even having a better shot within each party than their the presidential candidate. We may see for one of the first times there's actually up ballot momentum as opposed to down ballot momentum. And I think that Wisconsin's also interesting in that even though we as a state have voted for Democrats historically, people are putting Wisconsin in the toss-up category nationally. And part of the reason for this is that we have Scott Walker as a governor. Republicans have been successful winning seats for the state legislature. And so people nationally don't know exactly what to do with the state of Wisconsin. What column does Wisconsin go in? And so Republicans see Wisconsin as the possibility of a pickup presidentially, but also in prominence. Also, Priebus, the chair of the Republican National Committee, is from Wisconsin. The Speaker of the House is from Wisconsin, also a Republican. So Wisconsin is a Republican state, but that Democrats are expecting to have a good year, and they tend to have a better year in a presidential race. That's why I think even nationally, people are going to be paying attention to the way that Wisconsin Senate race is going, the way that the Wisconsin race is polling in the presidential election, and really Wisconsin is going to be the center of attention.
Tim Dale, a political scientist from University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, is here with us today to talk about the fall election season. Also joining us is Trump delegate Brian Westrate of Eau Claire, Clinton delegate Vicky Burke of Onalaska, and Keith Knutson, a history professor from Viterbo University. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on regional races to watch in the November election. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about the upcoming November elections. Now that both parties have hosted their national conventions, the race is on to win over Wisconsinites for the fall elections. And regional races for the state and U.S. legislature continue to be competitive. Joining us to talk about what voters can expect in the coming months, our 3rd Congressional District Republican Chair, Brian Westrate of Eau Claire, Chair of the La Crosse County Democratic Party, Vicky Burke of Onalaska, Tim Dale, a political scientist from University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, and Keith Knutson, a history professor from Viterbo University. You know, we've been talking a lot about the national presidential race in November, but, you know, really turning our attention to Wisconsin races. You know, we've mentioned the Feingold and Johnson race, which has, you know, already been fairly eventful, and both candidates have been fairly vocal. Tim, you know, what's really stood out to you in this race?
Well, this race is representative of something strange that we have in Wisconsin, which is that in presidential years, Democrats tend to be more successful statewide races. In midterm elections, Republicans tend to be successful. So if we recall, Johnson beat Feingold in 2010, Johnson's first term in office. And 2 years later, Tammy Baldwin is elected versus Tommy Thompson. That's 2012, Obama's reelection campaign. And there were people calling political scientists in Wisconsin from national news sources saying, what is going on in the state of Wisconsin where you elected Ron Johnson and 2 years later, Tammy Baldwin? What happened in that 2 year time span? As we know in Wisconsin, the voters didn't really change. It's just who turns out in elections changes. And so probably one of the more pronounced pronounced examples in the country of that kind of shift between midterm and general general elections. It really is demonstrated in Wisconsin. And so Feingold is up in the polls now. If it was a midterm election, we might be seeing the polls in the opposite direction. And so something to watch is this dynamic. How is Wisconsin in 2016 going to look more like Wisconsin in 2012, less like Wisconsin in 2014 or 2010?
Mm-hmm. And another, you know, federal race is the third congressional district with Ron Kind. Keith, you know, what are your thoughts on, you know, how Ron Kind is doing against another Democratic candidate, Myron Buchholz?
It's not received a lot of publicity, but it recently at the Democratic National Convention, as Congressman Kind addressed delegates, Vicki got to experience this one. Ron Kind was heckled by Sanders supporters, and I think here we get to one of the problematic policy issues for the Democrats, and that is international trade, the Trans-Pacific Partnership specifically this year, which Kind has been a supporter of, and the Sanders supporters, of course, opposed. So as Vicki has mentioned, the primary will determine who will be the Democrat on the ticket, but there is no Republican opponent, so the Democrats don't need to worry about holding that seat. On the other hand, the party establishment may want to retain an incumbent congressman. I think if Kind were to win this fall, it would be his 10th term, so that would be 20 years. I think I'm right on that number. These are the kinds of issues, not exactly of a moment, because we've been discussing trade issues now for at least two decades since NAFTA. Some of us are old enough to remember Ross Perot and that sucking sound south to Mexico over the NAFTA debate. It's an issue that crosses over into the Republican Party. Of course, this has been a primary issue for Donald Trump. That is a stance against, let's call it, globalization and trade issues. So it'll be an interesting race, and the prediction by what used to be the Governmental Accountability Board predicts only about a 9% turnout. I'm going to take a guess that in the third congressional district, we're going to bump that turnout up in this primary, because this may be the only contested congressional district in the state. I haven't been following the other districts. So this is an important one for the, I'm going to call it the party establishment, that is the Democratic Party establishment, a longstanding congressman, and an issue that is roiling our society mightily. So it's going to be an interesting race, and I don't have a prediction.
And Vicki, you know, what are your thoughts on you know, this contested race between Kind and Buchholz?
Well, you know, it will play out in the election. I have known Ron Kind since he was 15 and 16 years old because I was a teacher at Logan High School, and so I probably have a little bit of a bias there toward him as a candidate supporter. But in the past, but as chair, obviously have to keep that kind of a neutral attitude about the race. You know, the disagreement over TPP and the trade policies, the congressman very ably sticks to his belief that this is a deal that contains enforcement triggers to sanction member nations if they fail to abide by labor and human rights and environmental standards. And that's important. He also said that, you know, military leaders have expressed support to him for this trade agreement on diplomatic and national security grounds, and that really China has a great deal of influence over trade kind of rules in East Asia, and we need some kinds of agreements. So on the other hand, obviously you have those who have seen the impact in the area of labor and jobs and have a different opinion about it. I do think there'll be a large turnout if it, I know that in La Crosse County, we statewide in the primary in April, we had statewide 47% Democratic turnout, and it was 54% in La Crosse County. So I do believe that we'll have a strong turnout in the August 9th primary. And we can be assured there'll be a Democrat elected, but I certainly think that Kind has some advantage being the incumbent, but we'll see what the voters say on August 9th.
And talking about, you know, the third congressional race, as has been mentioned, there is no Republican candidate for this race. Brian, why is that?
When redistricting took place in 2010, the St. Croix Valley, which is a historically Republican area by about a 65-45 split, was taken out of the 3rd District and put into the 7th District where Congressman Duffy is. And then the 3rd District was extended to the east and picked up Portage County, which has UW Stevens Point in it. So now the 3rd Congressional District, Wisconsin, has more public universities, public institutions of higher education than any of the other 7 districts. And college towns are Democrat towns. La Crosse is proof of that. Eau Claire is proof of that. Stevens Point is proof of that. Madison, certainly. And so you look at Ron Kind as a $2 million war chest, and in 20 years, Ron Kind has passed 10 bills that he sponsored. Of those 10 bills, 3 of them had to do with the Upper Mississippi River Basin protection. One of them had to do with honoring the Czech Republic president, and the other 5 were also meaningless. Ron Kind has spent the last 20 years doing exactly nothing for the people of the 3rd District, but by doing nothing, you don't make anybody mad. It's only by doing something that you make people mad. And so Ron Kind is literally the poster child for the concept that while Congress has like a 17% approval rating, it also has close to a 90% or better year-over-year reelection rate. So people say, oh, well, I hate Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. is broken, but my congressman is great. It's how we got Dave Obey for 44 years in the 7th, and how we've had Jim Sensenbrenner forever over in his district. The American public, as was alluded to by one of the professors, has this disconnect where they're unhappy with the status quo, but they love the people that keep them in the status quo. It doesn't make much sense. But we looked at the 3rd District, and we said, okay, you have a 20-year incumbent congressman. You have a district that is now demonstrably less friendly to Republicans, a guy who has a $2 million war chest. Instead of giving Ron Kind a platform with which to prepare for his run for either the U.S. Senate or the governor's mansion, that we would simply focus our limited resources on state-level races, on defeating Steve Doyle over there in La Crosse, on defeating Lassa and Schilling in the state Senate, and on preserving the seats that we have in the 67th and the 93rd and moving forward. And it was just a calculated decision. Look, political leadership at its core is allocating extremely limited resources to unlimited need. So rather than spend the $180,000 that we spent in 2014, the $320,000 we spent in 2010 trying to defeat Ron Kind, we have chosen to put our resources into, again, controlling the controllables, which is much more state assembly, state senate. And Ron Kind can continue to be part of the minority in the U.S. House of Representatives where he gets nothing done for the people of the 3rd. So that was the decision we made.
That's 3rd Congressional District Republican Party Chair Brian Westreit of Eau Claire. He's with us today to talk about what area voters can expect during the fall election season. Also joining our conversation is Chair of the La Crosse County Democratic Party, Vicki Burke, Tim Dale, a political scientist from UWL, and Keith Knutson, a history professor from Viterbo University. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. And, you know, turning our focus to the state legislature, Tim, what do you think, which races or race is going to be the ones to watch in this season?
Well, I think the races are all over the state. And I think that because it's a presidential year, these races are going to connect to big picture questions, big picture issues. And in the state, we know we have no shortage of big picture issues in the state. One of the things I like to say is that sometimes when I'm teaching undergraduates about politics, they will say something like, well, there's no difference between the two parties, or I don't see any difference between the two candidates running for office. I don't hear anyone making that argument this year. And I think there's so much difference between the candidates that we're talking about big philosophical questions about the purpose of government. We're talking about big philosophical questions about what the state should spend its money on, or if the state should spend its money at all on certain things. And so I think this is where the mobilization of voters is really going to be where this election it comes down to, in particular districts. And looking at the state races, I think the question that voters are going to be asking themselves is, who do they trust to be in charge of the state government, just as they're asking, who do they trust to be in charge of the national government? And I think more than candidate to candidate, I think this is going to be a big issue election.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, talking about the 32nd Senate, that's one of the races that does have, you know, Jennifer Schilling as the incumbent. She has a Democratic opponent right now, and Dan Kopenke, who was the previous senator in that seat, has also entered the race. He has an opponent. Vicki, what do you take of this race? Where do you think things are at?
Dan Kopenke has been beaten by both Congressman Ron Kind and State Senator Jennifer Schilling in past races. And I think that Senator Schilling is really well-loved and respected. I rarely hear anything about her negative with the people when I go out, and they really like her. At the fair, for example, people who came up recognized her and really appreciated her. And people throughout the state of Wisconsin, I believe, I have a sister who is in Dodge County, and they also have great respect, so she's respected throughout the state. And as far as the that race, I believe that she is a strong strong candidate in that race, and that she was able to defeat Dan Kopenke before, and I believe she'll be able to do so again.
And Brian, you know, what is your take on Dan Kopenke returning to this the race for this Senate seat?
Dan has done a very good job at sitting in that Senate seat before for the people of La Crosse. He is known and well-liked by the people of that area. You know, the 32nd, I think he's lived his whole life from the 32nd. And if memory serves, Dan lost, I believe, in the recall election. And that's a whole different animal. That was a whole different animal, a whole different period. We've already seen one senator who lost in a recall election regain the seat here in the state. And Dan, I just looked at the fundraising reports. The July continuing report was due on the 15th, and you could search then the database the day after with the GAB. And Dan has raised almost as much as Jennifer, I believe. But unlike Jennifer, zero of his dollars have come from political action committees, and I believe about half of her money has. I mean, so Dan is literally proving that his support is within the grassroots, individual families of the 32nd district. And as I say, the follow the money, you see that about half of her support appears to be coming from political action committees, whether that's the Democrat Party of Wisconsin, La Crosse, whatever. And so, I think that it's a race that Dan has a very good chance of winning. He has never been a fire-breathing conservative or Republican or whatever label you want to put on him. He's literally just a man of the people who made his living in industry in the ag business prior to now making his living, owning a small market baseball team. So I think that that's going to be a race to watch for sure.
And Keith, we were talking about how Dan Kopenke lost the Senate seat in the recall election, and he was beaten by Jennifer Schilling, who is the minority leader. What's your take on this race?
Well, I agree with Brian. Dan Kopenke is a longstanding member of this community and has made very positive contributions. He lost in the recall because he voted in favor of Act 10, which I think engendered a lot of emotion within this state Senate district. And I think that sense of emotion has not been lost among the supporters of Jennifer when she defeated Dan in the recall. She has since, of course, moved into Democratic legislative party leadership. I think that, as Tim has said, this is a presidential election year, so turnout for the Democrats will be at that presidential level, which is a barrier for Mr. Kopenke to regain office. And Governor Walker's approval ratings are, I think, still in the upper 30s. And so that doesn't help Dan Kopenke in his quest to unseat Jen Schilling. So I think he has a decidedly uphill battle to regain political office there.
We've been talking with Keith Knutson, a history professor from Viterbo University, Tim Dale, a political scientist at UWL, 3rd Congressional District Republican Party Chair Brian Westreit of Eau Claire, and Chair of the La Crosse County Democratic Party Vicky Burke of Onalaska, about what to expect from local, state, and national politicians before the November elections. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. Newsmakers.